Welcome back to Vermont Edition. I'm Jane Lindholm. Last week, we conducted a series of interviews introducing the major party candidates who are challenging the current office holders for governor and lieutenant governor. We got a lot of reaction to this series, and producer Rick Singeri joins me now to share some of it. Hi, Rick.
Hey, Jane. We talked with five candidates for governor over the week, Republican candidates Emily Payton, Steve Barry, and Scott Milne, Democratic candidate Brooke Page, and Liberty Union candidate Peter Diamondstone. Here's a sampling of comments from listeners.
James in Leicester says Peter Diamondstone's views are admittedly not mainstream, but they are far from outlandish. He should give listeners reason to reflect, and I appreciate that you showed him respect.
About Democratic candidate Brooke Page, Thinking Mom posted this online. Mr. Page was so refreshing and made strong points about sustainable energy and health care. I appreciate his perspective on the political climate in Vermont, in which there is no tolerance for anything but the Democratic Party.
But Erica was in the opposite camp, saying, I agreed with a few of the points that Brooke Page struggled to make, but even if I agreed with every single thing he said, I would not vote for him. The petulance and the brattiness and the bad manners could be forgiven if he was capable of understanding the issues on a deep level, rather than the extremely superficial, hyper-general, cliched way that he did.
Steve Barry is one of the Republican challengers for governor. After our interview with him, we received this note from Rob. Thank you, Jane Lindholm, for your wonderful questions and for tolerating grumpy Steve Barry. He's a belligerent old man and has no business in politics. He certainly did not sufficiently answer your questions, and he has it all wrong about single-payer health care and the VA.
But a listener using the handle Awake posted this. After reading the comments about Mr. Barry, I just had to listen for myself, expecting a total horror show. Wow, have I been surprised. He for sure has my vote and full support. After hearing him speak of liberty and independence, I can see why the other posters here hate and belittle him. True freedom and independence cannot exist within the progressive utopia that's being pushed upon us.
And Jessica posted this about our interview with Steve Barry. The only redeeming moment in Mr. Barry's interview, particularly the part about education, which made me scream and bang my hands on the steering wheel, was listening to Jane Lindholm hold herself together while being shushed and berated. And Tiki in Burlington summed up some of the reaction this way. Thanks for hosting the circus today, Vermont Edition. It's akin to watching a classic Elvis flick. And Jane, that's a sampling of the reaction we got from listeners from our week of interviews with those candidates who are challenging incumbent Peter Shumlin in the governor's race.
Rick, thanks for reading some of those.
Oh, you're welcome, Jane.
This is indeed a very interesting primary season with candidates switching parties in the gubernatorial race, Republicans struggling to find a party-endorsed candidate for governor, and failing to put forward a full slate of down-ticket candidates. So let's continue this part of the discussion, and here to provide some context to the primary races in Vermont is Bert Johnson. He's an associate professor of political science at Middlebury College. Professor Johnson, welcome back to Vermont Edition.
Thanks, Jane. Happy to be here.
So it's been a different kind of primary season this year, as you may have gathered from some of the emails that we received, listeners responding to our interviews with some of the candidates for governor. Taking the broad view, what are you seeing?
Well, I think actually some of those comments say one thing about Vermont, which is that the political system is quite permeable to a wide range of views. People talk a lot about how bad the Republican Party is doing in terms of fielding candidates and recruitment, but really we do see in the range of candidates that we're seeing a range of different perspectives, for better or for worse.
So does it matter then? I mean, is this just sort of a primary that we can say, hey, this is just the system we have here?
Well, I think as political scientists, we try, as you said in your introduction, to put things into context. So that means we have a perhaps tendency to think that things are neither as good or as bad as they seem. And in terms of the lack of Republican representation in the races this year, I think you can see two reasons for that. And one of them is just that there are a lot of incumbents running for re-election. And because we're a relatively left and center state, we have a lot of Democrats who are the incumbents. And that means that high-quality Republican challengers are more likely to bow out this year and maybe wait till next time when there might be an open seat. And we've seen that with, for example, Randy Brock in the governor's race.
Right, although he hasn't said that he'll run next time, just not going to run this time.
That's right.
But what about that? What about the Republican Party? I mean, certainly when you look at incumbents who are mostly Democrats, you can see why it might be difficult to recruit a qualified candidate on the Republican side. On the other hand, the lack of qualified and established candidates to run for governor and some of the down ticket races on the Republican Party line, what does that say about the Republican Party?
Well, I think it says a couple of things. And one is just that when applying for a job, any of us would estimate what our chances of getting that job are, whether it's a conventional job like we might apply for or it's politics. So politicians are no different, and politicians might see the strength of incumbents and decide that they'd rather buy a ticket, for example, to the Vermont State Lottery than running for office. Part of that is because of this incumbency effect, but also part of it is because of the national reputational effect of the Republican Party. And that has gone further and further to the right. And, of course, Vermont is just not that far right. And you can see that particularly with the statewide seats that we're electing people to Congress. We just don't see a lot of competition there because there the reputational effects of the Republican Party are most relevant for people choosing who to vote for.
So what do you think the Republican Party should do? I mean, disassociate itself from the national party more in order to get candidates who are going to have more traction here?
I think definitely the political science take on that would be you'd have to innovate. So do something different and perhaps distinguish yourself more from the National Republican Party. And that is not a hopeless cause. I think you can see historically that any major change in the party system nationally has begun first locally. So I think innovation at the local level can actually not only help Vermont candidates, but could eventually help the national party in its attempts to appeal to more moderate voters.
Do you think that we pick too much on the Republican Party here? I mean, as we look at these races as they're lining up, we could look at the lieutenant governor race, and there's no Democrat running against incumbent Phil Scott. We have progressive candidate Dean Corn, who said he'd happily take the Democrats' endorsement, but they didn't put anybody up in the end to run for lieutenant governor. So is this something that you're also just seeing as a problem with incumbents really getting entrenched in the state?
Oh, absolutely. You have a strong incumbent in Phil Scott, and so, of course, we don't have a Democrat running. I think it's also the case that, in general, it's not necessarily the case that we have a very strong party system in Vermont, either for the Democrats, for the Republicans, for the progressives. I contrast Vermont very often in my classes with New York State, which has a very strong, well-organized party system in which the parties are fielding candidates and they're organizing elections. We just don't have that in Vermont, and it's the nature of our political culture and the nature of our party system. If you look at the kinds of scandals that affect New York politics, they often have to do with the party machinery. We have Malcolm Smith in New York that just was, there was a mistrial declared in his case, but he was accused of being involved in bribing party officials. But we don't see that kind of scandal in Vermont. The scandals we see are, you know, with the DCF or Vermont Health Connect, administrative management, once in a while with ethics, but they don't have to do with the party organizations. And I think that's a good indicator that we just don't have these powerful party organizations.
So what does that mean for us then if we don't have the powerful party organizations?
Well, there's a downside to it, which means that the party is not always fielding candidates because it can't always pressure people into running. It's maybe not always fielding candidates for every single office for which candidates might be competitive. I think about the most recent open seat governor's race where there were five very viable candidates in the Democratic primary and nobody running for lieutenant governor in the Democratic side. You might have had a better organized party even that out a little bit. But the other thing, to bring it back to what I said right at the beginning, is it means the system is permeable to someone who might not have the party connections and might want to run. So even though the party might not be as strong, and there are downsides to that, the system as a whole is accessible to ordinary people who might want to take a shot.
So thinking here of somebody like Emily Payton, who's running this year as a Republican, even though she does not have the party's support, or Brooke Page, who's running as a Democrat.
That's right.
So what's the upshot for you, Bert Johnson? Are you going to be watching this primary carefully or just waiting till the general election?
Oh, I'm a political scientist. Of course, I'll be watching it carefully. I think there's a lot of opportunity to see where voters come down on in these various races. I think even if there are candidates who are almost certain to win. It'll be interesting to see how the other candidates do, whether there's a lot of support for other candidates. Voters might be sending a message by a significant portion of them voting for one of the other candidates. So it's always interesting to watch primary elections. It's also going to be interesting to watch the level of participation in primaries. Vermont tends to be a high participatory state, but we dropped a little bit in 2012 in terms of our level of participation, and it'll be interesting to see if that trend continues.
Bert Johnson is an associate professor of political science at Middlebury College, and he's been talking with us about how the races for top political spots in Vermont are shaping up and what it says about our system here. Bert Johnson, thank you so much for talking with us.
You're very welcome.
I just want to make another primary note here. On Monday on the program, we talked about a contentious race in upstate New York for an open congressional seat. In yesterday's New York primary, Ann Stefanik defeated Matt Doheny for the Republican nomination in the 21st Congressional District. So Stefanik will face Democrat Aaron Wolf in November to determine who replaces Democratic Representative Bill Owens, who is retiring. And that does it for today's show. Tomorrow, we're going to take a look at housing discrimination. Vermont Legal Aid just released a report that shows discrimination remains widespread for renters. We'll find out what renters face, and we'll talk about the role and responsibilities of landlords. If you want to comment on racial discrimination and rental discrimination, write to vermontedition@vpr.net and listen tomorrow at noon. Our producers are Patty Daniels, Rick Singeri, and Sage Van Wing. We have production assistance from Catherine Hayes. Peter Biello directed the show, and our executive producer is John Van Hoosen. I'm Jane Lindholm. Thanks for listening.